Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to Malka Fleisher. Malka, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I get to be at the front of the show this time.
That's right, the front of the show. It's summertime, so summer schedules are wackier, but we're getting it done because we continue to broadcast even though it's summer and we just want to summer and vacation. But the truth of the matter is that even though there is a different kind of atmosphere in the summer in Israel and the kids are off and all that, still things are moving along. You know, things are still happening very much. For example, I was with my friend Jake Bennett on a double Tiul day, where first I went with him to the Temple Mount, and then afterwards went on a Regavim tour, which is really seeing how the Palestinian Authority is building specifically in Area C of Judea and Samaria of the West Bank. So what we really like, and both parts of the day are on the one hand very inspiring, that the Jewish people are back in Jerusalem in the Temple Mount, but on the other hand, you really see
a big
Muslim shrine there. Interestingly enough, we had some young kids like Elazar, and my nephew was old, my son Elazar, our son Elazar, and our nephew
Yehuda,
and he was there, and it was fun to be with kids, because there's something to be with kids. It's like much more kind of hopeful.
Oh, that's nice.
My mom said that too. She said there's like a different atmosphere when you have kids with you, so that part of we also went with a very old rabbi, Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, to the Temple Mount. Also, all of us, like the young kids, the old rabbi, the Temple Mount, the good parts of the fact that we're at the Temple Mount, the bad parts. But overall, a very positive experience. The next part of the tour was with the organization called Regavim, and they're trying to stop all over the country, not just in Area C, not just in the Judea and Samaria West Bank, but also in the Negev and in the Galil, all kinds of land takeovers. And you know, the left that I deal with on Twitter and stuff are always saying, you know, there's a creeping annexation of Israel, is creepingly annexing Judea and Samaria. And I'm like, first thing, we're not creeping. We're trying very hard to annex Judea and Samaria. And we're saying it outright, so that's not creeping. But
I wish we'd say it outright a little more. I don't know how outright that outrightness is.
That's right. And moreover,
it's not creeping, though.
There is a creeping annexation of the other side. That's what's really happening. A massive land-building effort, certainly in the Palestinian-controlled areas, which is called A and B, but in Area C, where the Jews are supposed to be controlling, where Israel's supposed to be found in Judea, there's really a creeping annexation from the other side, which is in their strength, which is, you know, the Jews are good at words, and they have a strong bureaucracy. Israel's got a strong bureaucracy, too strong.
What's your point?
My point is, when you don't have bureaucracy and you have just free money to build, and you and your uncle and your other uncle owns the cement shop and your other uncle owns the rock shop and you know how to do electricity and you get money from the Qataris or whoever to build, or the European Union, which have a lot of signs saying we're trying to build Area C. So you just put up tons and tons and tons of concrete and houses all over the place and road, and basically creepingly annex it to the other side. Anyway, I called it the Khurban tour,
yeah,
the destruction tour. Or
yeah, your mom told me, she was like, it was a good day, like 3 weeks wise. She's like, these were good tours. This was a good tour, the Regavim tour, to go on during the 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was a 3 weeks tour for sure. So that was a little bit upsetting. And I know that I'm not the only one who gets upset on the Temple Mount. You have a story about a Saudi blogger who went to the Temple Mount and was also accosted by the creeping annexation of the other side, meaning to say he was struck by the very people who don't want to see Israeli presence there. Anybody who's friendly to Israeli presence, especially Arab, they attacked. Is that right?
Well, basically, there was a very interesting press event, I guess, in Israel. Six media personalities from Arab countries were invited to Israel, including a Saudi and an Iraqi. Now, the only person that we know who their name is a person named Mohammed Saud, who is a blogger from Saudi Arabia. never before has anybody who's like remotely related to media come to Israel as an official welcome guest, basically.
But he's a known entity. We know him. He's a Twitterer. He's a blogger. He puts up pro Netanyahu videos.
Right. So he is a pro Netanyahu, which is weird, right? Like on a lot of levels, he's a pro Netanyahu Saudi, and he is very vocally in favor of normalization between Saudi Arabia and Israel. The other journalists, it's unclear almost anything about them. Now, obviously, they came to Israel, and some Israeli official quoted one of these journalists. They took them on tours. They took them to Yad Vashem, Holocaust Memorial. They took them to holy sites throughout Israel. And they're like, this place is like a dreamland. We can't believe it. If only our country, like our kinsmen would know about this place and how incredible it is, that it would be like, it would change everything kind of thing. So it was very impressive to these people. And I guess they're sort of,
kudos on the foreign ministry.
Kudos on the foreign ministry for bringing them. Yes, kudos to the foreign ministry, and we should be doing more of these things. And this is the final frontier, kind of, is the normalization with the Arab world. And
name for the show, normalization, the final frontier.
Yeah,
okay,
it's the thing that Israel needs to do the most, I think, as its like last stage of total rooted awesomeness in the Middle East, is to get everyone else in this area to be like, yeah, we like having Israel and being able to kind of say it openly. Anyway, so this blogger, Mohammed Saud, and you can totally find him on Twitter. He's pretty active. He posts like every few days on Twitter, Mohammed Saud. He went up to the Temple Mount. He went into Jerusalem's Old City and up to the Temple Mount during his visit on Monday. And there was video taken of his experience. Basically, what happened is that he was taunted and attacked by people on the Temple Mount, even children, like young men, type of thing.
Were,
yeah,
like
13, 12, 13, 14-year-old boys,
right,
who like walked right up to him and spit in his face. Now, I'll tell you, you said that you went to the Temple Mount the other day with the kids. When the Jews go up to the Temple Mount with the kids or without the kids,
right,
there's a lot of security presence.
Right.
Now, the presence is there to protect the Jews, but it's also there to keep the Jews in line kind of thing. It's there to make sure no one does the like most radically offensive thing on earth, which is pray to a god, right? Pray to their god, which is like totally unacceptable to the Islamic Waqf. Incidentally, I understand that. And they're totally right, because Jewish prayer is one of the most potent things that there is. So I can totally understand that they would want to stop that. They're absolutely right.
Their God might hear them.
They're fools, right? Because like, as if you can really stop a person from praying, like unless you stop their brainwaves, you really can't stop a person from praying. So that's ridiculous. But I can understand their fear, and they should continue to be afraid of Jewish prayer. But there's lots of security presence when Jews go up to the Temple Mount, like lots and lots. But this guy, Mohammed Saud, who I think with sunglasses on looks like Lenny Kravitz, he was really attacked. And I was sort of surprised that there was no official person from Israel who came to his aid.
Maka, let's take that video of him walking in the Temple Mount being spat at, and the rocks being thrown at him, the chairs being thrown at him, all kinds of stuff. And let's set that to, I want to get away. I want to fly
away. I mean,
only
with the sunglasses. Once he takes off the sunglasses or smiles, he doesn't look like Lenny Kravitz anymore.
Right.
But with the sunglasses, he's like, he's got this like Middle Eastern music video thing going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was the situation of Mohammed Saud. Incidentally, after this whole experience, and honestly, it was dangerous, right? It was like a really, sort of surprised that he got out of there just with a disgustingly wet face and having some chairs and stuff thrown at chairs.
Yeah, they were
having some
chairs
and stuff thrown at him, because it could have been much worse than that.
Okay, but
my guess is that the only reason that they didn't do that was a fear of some kind of backlash from Saudi Arabia.
He was very brave, but he was all alone, like you were saying. The Israeli police did not kind of. In fact, I asked the Israeli police. I said, "Hey, what happened to that Saudi blogger yesterday?" And they were like, yeah, And I'm like, what, did he not request any security? They're like, yeah. Like, I don't think he understood.
Oh, the animosity that people have toward
right.
him.
Right. And the thing is, and I thought he might, maybe he thought that it was more under Israeli control. The fact is that.
I'm sure he learned a lot.
Yeah, he learned a lot. And the world saw a lot. I mean, the real truth is he's a proxy for anti-Israel hate. And the fight most vehemently is against Arabs who want to normalize relations with the Jews. That's who the most dangerous person is, right?
Right. And the media,
Arabs who are not under the thumb and control of the jihadist mindset. Here comes a guy from Saudi Arabia, and he should be like Mr. Wahhabi Jihadi, but he's calling for the other way, so they see him as a traitor.
Right, and that's what they called him. They called him a traitor. They called him Zionist trash.
Yeah, they're like,
go to a Beit HaKnesset.
Yeah.
And he's like, he didn't say anything. But inside he's like, wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind. I know there's a lot of schmoozing and shul.
I heard there's herring.
Yeah. L'chaim. L'chaim. Okay, yeah.
I wish we could have met him, but he did get to meet somebody that he really, really likes.
I got to shake. I'll never wash this hand again.
He got to meet his Israeli icon, Bibi Netanyahu, which is really nice. It's nice that Bibi Netanyahu is still some people's icon also. I appreciate that. And he like puts
icon?
Posts on Twitter, whatever you call it. I know you're very sticklery these days about word definitions.
Yeah, I think you mean me like idol, but I'm happy you didn't use the word idol.
Well, you pick a word.
Hero.
Fine.
Okay. So you got to meet Benjamin Netanyahu.
He got to meet Benjamin Netanyahu.
And to do a selfie.
I didn't see any selfie,
I know,
though. I wish that had come out there, obviously. So I don't know what's going to be with all that. Now, I also don't know what's going to be with him going back to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Because I don't exactly have my finger on the pulse of Saudi media. But what I've seen from Israeli media talking about Arab media is that there has been a lot of conflict over this visit to the Temple Mount. And it's not over like necessarily what you would expect. Like, I originally thought that the conflict in the media was going to be about how this Saudi was treated and whether it was okay or not okay. Now, some Saudis are like, what is this? We've supported them financially, these Palestinians. We've given to them. We've supported them in the international community. And they're like, they think they heard them say kind of slurs about the Saudi royal family. And how can you talk like that about us? And this is Mamash Lo Baseder, right? This is not okay. Other media people are like, just because one guy goes to Davin on Al-Aqsa doesn't mean that Saudi Arabia is like normalizing with everybody, with Israel. Just chillax. And there's like a whole discussion. Yeah. Are we normalizing? Are we not normalizing? Is he calling for normalization? Should we accuse him of being a normalizer? Should we not accuse him of being a normalizer? And then there's this whole there's really a lot of conversation around this issue.
Right.
Well, normalization. And there's people who really don't. Basically, no one wants to be accused of normalizing with Israel.
Right. Because it's important to remember that in the 70s, there came out that famous Khartoum vote. No normalization, no trade, no relations. Basically a state of war. Like, we will not accept them. It's like nidui. It's a, what do you call it? Excommunication. It's a type of relationship that the Arabs have had to Israel in the last 100 years, what I like to call the 100-year war. And so here's a guy that's trying to end the 100-year war.
Right.
But I love it. You know, Malka, these people are so brave. I really love what you said before, which is it's the final frontier, which is normalization. I think that's a fabulous point you made, you know what I mean, and I, you know, and I'm also a Trekkie, so that works in that
that
level.
Works for you. You know, we're on Twitter. You and I are on Twitter.
Too much,
right? So I posted, yeah, sometimes too much. So I posted a tweet, like 2 days ago, which got me 100 new followers in like 36 hours.
That is awesome.
And basically, the tweet was about how waking up in Judea, like instantly upset, like if I woke up in Judea this morning, it means that I've already upset hundreds of millions of people who are moving around all kinds of money and doing all kinds, like racking up, you know, hundreds of millions of man hours in trying to defeat me. So I've already got a good start to my day, right?
Right.
And it was like meant to be a joke, but also meant to be a comment on how just existing in Judea is like out like outraging to so many people who want to see Jews kicked out of Judea. So I got 100 new followers after that. And a lot of evidence that I am so right. Basically, there people come out at you and they're just like full of rage and hate about Jews living in Judea, and like your inherent existence means the oppression of other people. It means stealing from somebody. I don't steal. I don't oppress. That's for sure. And one of the things that I found, that I felt the need to say to people, which is sort of like ridiculous to have to ever say, but I think that maybe people need to hear it at the same time, is that I like living in an Arab Middle East. I don't need to live in like a Anglican, you know, crusader like world it's not like I feel so much more comfortable in Germany than I do in Iraq.
It's just a question of which background music do you want? Do you want the Christmas and the ding dong music, or do you want
Allahu Akbar?
Allahu Akbar.
You know, I don't know that we should vote on that. We could vote on that, but I don't know that we should vote on that here on the show. But the point is that, like, I don't have a problem with Arabs.
This is fascinating.
I don't dislike Arabs.
Listen to this, Maka. So, listen to this. I was speaking with a group of students yesterday that came to speak with me from Stand With Us.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. So instead of talking, I actually first 30 minutes, I got them to talk about what's going on campus, how mm-hmm. they're feeling.
And
then afterwards, I went into this whole monologue. I could have taken like three different issues: the narrative war, we're indigenous and tribal, and alternatives to the two-state solution. It's like a whole. But
sure.
I didn't have time for everything. But in any case, I focused on the tribal thing. Like, we're tribal. I kept saying, like, look, you got to be first thing. There's a word that I wish there was a more Torah nice word for it, but it's badass. And I said, it's a mitzvah to be badass. It's great. It's the right approach
Anshei
in the Middle
Chayil.
East. Anshei Chayil. Okay, that's okay, fine. Whatever you want. Yeah, that's. Thank you, Maka. See?
You're looking for a Torah.
That's right. We have to be Anshei Chayil. Thank you, darling.
Yes.
You've koshered my disgusting potty pe. So the old pie hole was dirty, and you've fixed it. Now, so I want to say that one of the things that I kept saying to them, like, we got to be strong. I told them that almost all of the basic terminology that the Hasbara industry, that the Hasbara squad has taught us, are really very problematic. Jewish and democratic, very problematic terminology. Moral army, the worst of all of the terminologies. Peace itself, the word peace, problematic word. And I kept on explaining to them how all these words are, in fact, really harmful to the tribal, indigenous way of talking and feeling about yourself here in the Middle East. So one girl says to me something, and, you know, when you speak to a lot of groups, it's rare to hear a really new thing, but I heard a new thing. So this one girl says, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but if you talk tough on campus, like, I was in a situation like that, and then a Palestinian girl, a girl who claimed to be Palestinian, ran out of the meeting, out of, like, the BDS meeting, crying, being like, they've taken my homeland.
That's a good one.
And I was like, for a second, I was, like, stunned, and then I said to her, why don't you run out of the meeting and say, they've taken my homeland.
They destroyed my temple.
They destroyed my temple. Why don't you be like, I fast for this on the 9th of Av coming up. I have a fast for this. For you have taken my land. You have destroyed my temple. You have your God, you know, your tabernacle on my holy place or whatever it is. And she looked at me and I was like, basically, it's an effort to unwhite. I can't believe this whole white discussion has come out.
I just want to say, by the way, sometimes I feel the need to say this, so I'm going to say this out loud. Listeners of ours who are white, we still love you.
You know, but
I feel horrible. It's like, what are these people? They were just born white. It's like, now they have to defend themselves for just their whiteness.
Hey, just because I look white, I do not self-identify as white, okay?
It's such a crazy world.
You know, but you know what it is, though? There is a sense to it. There is a kind of sense to it if you use it correctly, which is, I'm not talking about the American context. Forget that. But I'm not
they're like, spearheads of this.
We are a Middle Eastern people. And one of the main accusations against us has been that we are foreign peoples. And that's one of the most pernicious lies of them all. I'm just getting back to what you said before, which is like, if I have to choose Ding Dong Ding Dong or
Allahu
Akbar.
I don't know. It's like, but the point is that neither of them are necessarily what I would pick, but both of them are also fine. Meaning to say, like, oh, I can deal. The Jewish people are strong either way. And the point is that what I wanted to say about normalization,
right,
is that Israel's like, Israel is really part of this region. And it's right. Okay to have, like, you know, the smooth colored goat and the speckled goat. Nice. You know what I mean? It's like we're the speckled
we
goat.
We are not speckled.
We're the black sheep. And that's okay, because black sheep are not worse than white sheep.
That's right.
That's what we're talking about.
That's right.
And we can be a very interesting and beneficial
we're an interesting
part
mix.
Of this region. And we don't want more than what we want.
By the way,
which is our very small sliver of land in this place.
Turkey, by the way, is also a country that is half in Asia, half in Europe. And it's got different, like, these things as a mixture. Not that I'm saying we're like Turkey, but we're a little bit like Turkey.
The Jews, the thing is, everybody knows this already. But the thing you got to know about Jews is that we are everything. You can't really, we are definitely, as a tribe, we are definitely from the Middle East. But over the course of thousands of years, we've become everything. So, like, excuse you. We don't have to explain ourselves to you.
That's right.
We have been dispersed all over the place, and now we look like everything, and that's cool. We're the rainbow.
But we could still fake cry and run out of the room and be like, they've taken my homeland!
I mean, we don't have to fake cry.
Right.
It's like maybe we should get in touch with our actual feelings for a second and legitimately cry, because we're just as authentically upset as somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But if that chick is not authentically upset, if this Palestinian is just doing some political theater, I say, touche, right? Good job. And we can play that game too.
Okay. Speaking of political theater, Jason Greenblatt, the special representative of the Trump administration for international negotiation and Middle East, spoke at the UN, and very impressive speech. And there's a lot to talk about his speech, but one of the things that he said, which was new, and I'm my mother's son, and just...
When's your mom going to be on this show? Because you talk about her as if everybody knows who she is and all that stuff.
I am the greatest filter for my mom's breadth of knowledge. I represent her well, just like I represent the forefathers and mothers of the Jewish people in Hebron. And I that's right.
You are pretty awesome.
Thanks, babe. I try to speak in your name also, quoting you far and wide throughout the world.
Wow.
Speaking of your great wisdom. And oftentimes I say, Malka says this or Malka says that. My beloved Malka says this or that. And people all over the world say, you're one hell of a representative for the wisdom
of
Malka.
Wow.
So
let's just pause and
that. Amazing thought. Anyway, as I was talking about my mom loves a new thought.
Yes.
And I must say there was a new thought that Jason Greenblatt. Now I've met Jason Greenblatt a few times and shaken his hand. And I've heard him speak it a few times. I got to tell you, he's a sharp cookie. But you told me you
can't
say
allowed to say sharp cookies are what they were handing out for trick-or-treating in the 80s in New York.
Right.
You don't want to be a sharp cookie.
A soft cookie.
He's, I think, like a
smart cookie. That's what it is.
Smart cookie. Yeah, I don't know why cookie. That's better, but definitely not a sharp cookie.
Not a sharp cookie. He's he's sharp. And
there you go.
One smart cookie.
There. Okay.
Okay. So he goes to the UN and he says something which I haven't heard. He says, look, there's international law on these things, but scholars debate it. International consensus, supposedly, which there really isn't one, but international consensus will not solve these problems. International consensus will not solve these problems. You won't be able to force the parties to have peace, a word that makes me barf a little bit, but okay. You won't be able to force them because of something you call international consensus. That's not how it works. He goes, we got to put those things to the side. We got to put these, and basically, in other words, he says, don't use this the word international as a cudgel, as a bludgeon. Am I saying these things right?
I haven't used the word cudgel in a while, but I think you have used it right.
Yeah. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And that in itself, just that. Like, don't go out there using, well, international law says you are illegal under international law.
Right. He added to what you're saying, just a little word. He added that there's no like court that can uphold these things.
Right.
There's no real jurisdiction.
Right.
That neither of the parties have given someone jurisdiction, that you can interpret international law in different ways, which
right.
is exactly what the parties are doing.
Right.
So it's not so effective, basically.
Right.
And you can issue all these harsh worded resolutions, but they're not binding.
Very, 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 very interesting stuff. And I want to tell you, like, where I thought it was so brilliant is like the articulation of it, kind of like understanding where there's a hiccup, where people are using, again, as a bludgeon or a cudgel or a bludgel against the Jewish people.
Cudgeon.
And being like, no, this has got to stop. And I was like, wow, that was, I don't know. That was
well,
like monumental.
Well, he went further than that. He also said, basically, in my opinion, his biggest argument against the attempt to use international consensus to press some kind of a solution was, he said this. He's like, international consensus is not international law. So let's stop kidding ourselves. If a so-called international consensus had been able to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it would have done so decades ago, and it didn't. Basically, his proof was in the pudding, which
right.
is like, you've been consensusing all day long, and that's, you guys are so good at consensusing. And he also accused them of writing heavily negotiated, purposely, ambiguously worded resolutions about this issue.
Right.
And he's like, you guys are ineffective.
Right.
He also slammed them. He's like, no international consensus or interpretation of international law will persuade the United States or Israel that a city in which Jews have lived and worshipped for nearly 3,000 years and has been the capital of the Jewish state for 70 years is not, today and forever, the capital of Israel.
Right.
Slam.
That's right.
I was very proud of that. You know, you're right about him saying new things. But I'm like, I'm a pretty simple girl. And when somebody gets into an international body like that at this meeting, which was all about Middle East issues at the United Nations Security Council.
Right.
And when they just give like a pretty rah, rah, rah speech about Israel's eternal rights and the rights of the eternal Jewish people, I love that. And I thought that was incredible that the United States sent their representative to the United Nations to give over that message,
mm-hmm.
which with such clearly worded, unquestionable
yeah.
support for not just Israel, but for the Jewish people. I mean,
yeah.
it was really tied together, the concept of Israel as a Jewish state and Israel pertaining to the Jewish people. And I thought that was very heartwarming and encouraging to me.
Good, good. God bless Jason Greenblatt. And these efforts towards normalization. Let's keep the theme going here.
Yes, I'm in.
Which is normalization, the final frontier. Like that very much, Malka.
Thank you.
Once again, your wisdom.
Wow.
I herald it. Okay. Speaking of international law, we actually had an international war 3,300 years ago with the Midianites. Went out to war to avenge their sending of their lovely maidens to entice and ensconce the Jewish people.
Ensconce?
Entice and...
Ensnare.
Ensnare the Jewish, thank you, the Jewish people.
Ensconce is like a fuzzy blanket.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm sure there was fuzzy blankets there also in that moment, but I don't want to talk about that. But what I want to say is that... God commanded Moses to Moshe Rabbeinu to avenge that and to destroy them for that action because they really undermined. They made very wisely a wedge between God and the Jewish people. And I want to talk about a few things here, like three topics, kind of quickly. First, I want to read a little bit of lore.
Okay.
There's a little bit of comic book in this week's Torah portion.
Okay.
It's not in the Torah portion. It's in the Midrash. The Torah portion just says that the Jews killed Bilam, the prophet,
mm-hmm.
the bizarro prophet, the
right,
wizard.
The bad guy.
The, you know, for really hatching the plan. And now we learn that he is the one who hatched the plan for the Midianite girl's attack.
Hmm.
Okay, he hatched that plan. So the Midrash says, before any of the Jewish soldiers were able to catch him, Bilam lifted up his arms. With his powers of Tumah, of darkness, he transported himself up into the air, too high for any arrow to reach him. So he was flying.
All right, cool.
You'll never catch me, Jews.
Until next time, Moses.
When he realized that the five Midianite princesses were also in danger, he quickly taught them how to fly by magic.
Wow.
They all soared up into the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, just imagine like six like evil jets, like MiGs of evil men. Pinchas saw how Bilam flew higher and higher. He called out to his soldiers, "Is there anybody who can fly after him and catch him?" A man from Shevet Dan named Tzeliah flew up chasing Bilam. As soon as Bilam realized that he was being pursued, what we call a biblical dogfight.
Wow.
Okay.
Who flew after them?
Tzeliah. As soon as Bilam realized that he was being pursued, he changed his direction. He sped upwards like an arrow disappearing from sight. Like 9 G's. You know, he was able to have just vertical flight. Tzeliah was disappointed, for he was not able to follow him. Now Pinchas took action.
Wait, why couldn't he follow him? Run out of gas?
He just didn't have that same power of darkness. He just, the guy took, I told you, he went, you know, a vertical G and was able to accelerate upwards.
Hmm. Amazing. So then what?
Now Pinchas took action himself. He tracked Bilam and followed him. Pinchas turned
into this guy?
Yeah, he watched him. He turned his tzitz, the forehead plate, the golden
his headband,
which has the words holy unto God with the four letter tetragrammaton, ineffable name of the God of Israel, on it, emblazoned upon it. He tracked Bilam and followed him. Pinchas turned his tzitz towards Bilam. The tzitz shot out a ray.
An iron dome.
Yeah, like a laser shot, not a missile in the missile.
Anti-aircraft
but like,
missile.
That's, but with a laser.
With
something,
a laser.
Something that back then they called a laser, okay? This caused Bilam to fall down. The holiness of the tzitz was greater than Bilam's power of magic. He shot him out of the sky.
Wow.
He zapped him out of the sky like an iron dome. / Star Wars.
David Sling.
Pinchas arrested Bilam and brought him before Moshe's Beit Din. He was sentenced to death and run through with a sword.
Wait, I mean, Bilam, didn't he land from very up high anyway?
It was, yeah, he was, but he was not, he was only mostly dead. It was, I'm just very badly hurt. Okay. Pinchas arrested Bilam. Okay. Pinchas's body was not buried. It rotted. And
wait,
it turned,
who is buried?
Bilam.
Bilam.
Bilam's body was not buried. It rotted and turned into poisonous snakes.
Wow.
Okay.
What did they do?
Then Pinchas also shot down the other five princesses, and they were slain by Jewish soldiers.
Ooh. Hard day.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, now the reason I read this is you can laugh, but to me it's like, no, this is awesome. I love that these stories exist, and in many ways, I like to think of them as the real kind of heroic energy and idea behind these comic books, but like through holiness.
When are we going to write these comic books?
Okay, we got to do that. But anyway, shot out of
these
the air.
These would be such a great Israeli version of like a Marvel film.
Right.
Why can't we do that?
Right, exactly.
When are we going to be Steven Spielberg?
Where is Steven? Okay.
Steven,
get to work. Steven, been Jewish. Come on. All right. But then, so I went comic book on you just now.
Yes.
And then, one of the things that we learned, one of the major groups of laws that we learned from this week's Torah portion is the ostensible, very opposite of war. Well, not the opposite of war, because we have a Jewish principle, which is they try to kill us. We won. Let's eat. So what we learn is the laws of koshering dishes from this week's Torah portion. That's right.
Wow.
Amongst the Midianite booty were pans, pots, and types of dishes.
I don't know if you can kosher the dishes.
Oh, well, good question, Mama. They had been used by Midianites for non-kosher food. Were Jews allowed to use them? So Eleazar, the son of Aaron, taught the laws applying to dishes. Okay? If a Jew wants to use a dish that was previously used in a hot, not kosher food, he must first kosher it. It is possible to kosher dishes of all types of metal, but not earthenware, like you said. Okay? If earthenware dishes were used for hot, non kosher food, a Jew may never use them. How do you kosher a dish? You have to clean it until it's completely free of dirt or rust. Then it is dipped into a kettle of boiling water. Immersing the dish in boiling water koshers it. However, if it is an object used directly over fire, such as a rack or a spit for roasting meat, it must be put into the fire to become kosher. Moreover, new dishes, even brand new metal pots, dishes, cups, or silverware that were manufactured or bought from a non-Jew must be dipped in a mikveh. This causes the utensil to change from a state of tumah to one of kedusha, but really, it's much more that, like, when it's passing hands from a, especially in this case of war, but basically, when you have a situation where the dish is becoming, like, going up, as in to the property of a Jew or to the land of Israel, for example, that kind of going up, anyway, you have to dip it. And the reason I tell you this is that, like, in the laws of war, and how Jewish is this? Right after the laws of war come the laws of food. You see that, Malka?
Now we're hungry.
This is a proof that the Torah is Jewish, okay? That after you kill the Midianites, you got to figure out how to make their stuff kosher so we can eat off this. I got this from a Midianite. Look at this. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Anyway, so that's that. The Jews, the fighters, didn't lose any fighter, and they brought back and they brought gifts to the temple, to the Mishkan, because it was a miraculous war where no Jews were lost. Surely, when you have superior technology like that, laser power. And finally, one of the big and contentious and tough issues in this week's Torah portion is the story of the tribes of Gad and Reuven, who want to settle on the Transjordan. Okay, and they say, look, we've gotten home, reached
we're comfy
home, right? We're home, and it's not so simple to poo-poo them, because also Moses himself led them in battle and conquered these lands, and they conquered it. This was the first conquering. In a sense, God is saying to them, of course you conquered it. If you conquered it,
it's yours.
It's the land of Israel,
right?
Or I didn't tell you to conquer Egypt, and
yeah,
you didn't
we're not going
it.
Around conquering stuff,
right? But you conquered the Transjordan, the east side of the Jordan River. And they said, listen, we're home. And Moses was very disappointed. He was very disappointed.
He was?
Extremely disappointed, heartbroken that they chose to stay. But he basically made a deal with them, saying, look, you can't now back out of the battle of the conquering of the land of Israel proper. You've got to join up. So they said, okay, we're going to build forts and gates and houses for our wives, children, and flock and cattle, and we'll go in and take part in the seven-year battle for the land of Israel. And then go back
to
our...
then we're coming back to our nice, comfy house. Those parts became the land of Israel afterwards, right? Aren't those parts considered part of the greater land of Israel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, Moses conquered it with God's blessings and assistance, of course. And it becomes, as you say, really part of the land of Israel. The caveat, though, is the first tribes to have been exiled and have kind of lost connection to the rest of the Jewish people were these two tribes plus a half that Moses instituted in order to keep them connected to the land of Israel, half of the tribe of Menashe. So it's important to know that there was a downside to this whole story.
Right.
There was a disconnect, and eventually the first to lose the connection to the land of Israel were these tribes. At the same time, one of the things that you and I have not done is toured the other side of the Jordan. Supposedly there are amazing, amazing biblical archaeology and a sense of the Bible, and you certainly get to see the land of Israel
from
Moses
the other
saw
side,
it. You
yeah,
know?
And it's so tall up there. Also, it's
so
much taller on the Jordanian mountains. So, yeah. I would love to see that.
You shall, darling. You shall, and you will bring along your kosher dishes.
Yes.
And if we have to get into the battle,
I'll just dunk them in the Jordan River.
Right.
I'll be fine.
Right. Oh, right.
Or we'll do all the things that it says in the Torah you're supposed to do.
That's right. So that's the stuff that we learned from this week's Torah portion.
Or maybe they'll just be like, hey, you want to buy some dishes? Because they'll be like, we don't get why there's a big war up in here.
That's right.
There's no problem at all. Let's just everybody relax.
That's right. There's really...
And then I'll be like, that is a nice dish. How much does it cost? And then they'll be like...
Five dinar.
And I'm like, that's highway robbery. I'll buy it for two. And then they're like, I have children.
Three.
Four. Yeah. And then I'm like, I have children. One and a half. And then they're like, okay, what about three? And I'm like, deal.
Nice.
That's what's going to happen.
Woof. Malka, that was both Middle East normalization and Middle East battle.
See, but that's okay. We can.
You're a warrior. You're a warrior for your family.
Thanks.
That was really
warrior
really good.
In the store.
That's right. And as you know, I have to quote Jeremy Gimpel, who came up with a great phrase. He goes, "I believe in land for peace. You give us our land back, and we'll give you peace."
Yeah.
Okay. You give us your lands, like Jordan, for example, and we'll give you peace, and you'll be blessed, and you'll be blessed through the peace that we're willing to give. Okay. Which is we'll create not just peace, we'll create like, you know, success for you, an opportunity for you, to really flourish. And I do believe in my, there's different hats that you wear around here, and in my less aggressive hat, which I have an aggressive hat, I have a less aggressive hat.
You have an aggressive hat and a non-aggressive hat?
I said less aggressive, not non-aggressive. Less aggressive, please. Don't misquote me. Nobody here said not non-aggressive. Okay. I'm saying in my less aggressive hat towards how I think about the region, I really do believe that there's prosperity that can be had for this region and for the children of Abraham. And it really will come through a very simple formula. Those who bless you will be blessed. That's the formula. Bless Israel, you will be blessed. You individually, but more jointly. If nations like Saudi Arabia will respect Israel, will bless Israel, will find the Quranic, Islamic way to bless Israel, which I think is really what's lacking today.
I sometimes think they want to.
They want to.
It seems like they want to more than ever.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what the show is about. Because normalization is the final frontier. Malka Fleischer, I want to thank you so much for joining
Thanks,
me on the program today. You're a fabulous co-hostess with Demostis. And if anybody wants to send us anything from fabulous recipes to donations or...
If you'd like to adopt a retired, beautiful flag from Hebron or from
right.
the historic Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, we have some beautiful flags up for adoption. Just go to YishaiFleischer.com, click on the flag page.
And in fact, Malka, we actually do have a dedication, and I was going to save it for next week, but because for my friend Dan, who is a great listener to the show, he is dedicating a show of Matot Maaseh, but this week we're splitting it up. So he gets a 2-for-1 deal. I'm going to
wow.
dedicate it both times. And it says my friend Dan, he says, I would like to dedicate Kedoshim, well, he changed it later to Matot Maaseh. He'd like to dedicate it to his mom and father, his mother and father, who I met in the Chabad of Camarillo, California, Dr. Harvey and Jessica Harris.
Nice. Beautiful.
And the show is dedicated to them, and so will
yes.
be next week.
Wow.
The Torah
That's
learning.
So nice.
And they got, of course, the great pleasure of having you on for so much. And I just want to bless Dr. Harvey and Jessica Harris and my friend Dan and his family for lots of success and really
yes.
blessings from the land of Israel. And when I say success, I mean health, happiness.
Yiddish Anachas.
Atzlacha, Yiddish Anachas, the whole thing. And really may your eyes behold the return of God to Zion, to Jerusalem, the rebuilding of Jerusalem in our days. So thank you to the Harris family and God bless you guys. Thank you, Malka. And I want to thank also all of our listeners. And let's come up with a hashtag to know if that they've listened to the show. I think the hashtag is those that bless you will be blessed. Like,
well, that's
yeah. Like
how about hashtag bless you?
Hashtag land of blessings. Hashtag bless you. Yeah, final frontier. The final frontier. The final frontier of the normalization of Jews, Judea, and the whole story. And really, that I think, and maybe if you think about it this way, light unto the nations is also a function of the nations,
Right.
It's not just our function.
Well, we have to be a light, too. I mean, if you want to talk about the final frontier, that's us.
But I'm saying,
we're our own final frontier.
But I'm saying, no, we are broadcasting light. The question is, do you want to receive it? That's the question. Do you want to be blessed by blessing?
Right.
And that's the opportunity. Folks, write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Listen to all our other great shows here at the Land of Israel Network. Go to yishaifleischer.com. And, of course, follow Malka Fleischer on Twitter. You will
follow Yishai on Twitter.
You will be entertained. I promise you. There's nothing more witty and sharp-tongued. And that cuts both ways when you're married to her. But all I'm saying is there's nothing more sharp-tongued and awesome than Malka out there sending the blessings and cutting down the bad guys, shooting her laser eyes, laser seats,
laser headband
at the bad guys. All right, folks, lots of blessings from the Land of Blessings, and may good things happen to you wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Don't forget to write us an email, and lots of love, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Josh Easton here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. And on my show this week, the one and only Mark Zell, chairman, Republicans Overseas in Israel, also the vice president, general counsel of Republicans Overseas Worldwide. Get his take on the Twitter battle between President Donald Trump and the three squad, as they're called, congresswomen, two of them scheduled to arrive here in Israel. Listen to what Mark has to say about the fact that Israel is letting these two anti-Semitic congresswomen into the country. What are your thoughts on that? Listen to the show only here on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Israel Uncensored with me, Josh Hastings.